You're listening to KHOI Story City Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, sitting in for Pat Schlerbaum. Station manager and engineer Mike Murphy is here keeping that warm glow on our KHOI's vacuum tubes. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, there's going to be a lot of activity for folks this weekend. You know, the usual farmer's market is providing a lot of goodies. And there's a number of other outdoor activities, including the first football game. So there's going to be a lot of folks that aren't familiar with the traffic patterns and Ames. And I just want to tell folks that if you're operating a vehicle, double up on your defensive driving skills. And please, no road rage out there. Give them a break, especially our pedestrians and bicyclists. There's a stray shower or so possible today, but mostly sunny skies. We may see a high of 91 degrees and south winds 5 to 10 MPs and miles per hour. This evening, we'll continue to see mostly clear skies as temperatures drop into the lower 60s, and the forecast calls for temperatures in the high 70s and 80s. With mostly sunny skies, currently it's 65 degrees. Mike, that'll be a great of walking temperatures and just an enjoyable weekend.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, without further ado, let's go to Dennis and his news.
The new Ames High School opens to students and the public. The Ames City Council considers naming the airport. And word of a deadly disease that affects rabbits in Story County. All made big news on the pages of the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that local students will use locations around Ames to illustrate science, technology, engineering, art, and math for children in a new limited TV series that was set to premiere last Saturday morning at the Ames Library. Members of the Story County 4-H High School robotics team have been working for 2 years on creating Full Steam Ahead. The program will broadcast on a local cable channel and then be available to stream on YouTube the next day. Each episode has a theme: robotics, ecology, athletics, art, architecture, astronomy, or virtual reality. At least 40 students from 5 high school classes have worked on the program. And the trip previewed another event set to take place last Saturday. The so-called Bug Village at the Iowa State University Insect Zoo was set to return. It started in 1997 and is a hands-on zoo with insects, spiders, scorpions, crabs, and more. The Bug Village open house was set to take place last Saturday at the Advanced Teaching Research Building at Pamel Drive and Stang Road, and another event was set to take place at Carr Park in Ames. Saturday's Trib reported that Governor Reynolds said the tax on businesses that Iowa uses to fund benefits for jobless workers would drop to its lowest rate in more than 2 decades. That announcement comes as Iowa's unemployment rate has returned to pre-pandemic levels, and after Reynolds spent more than $725 million from the state's allotment of federal pandemic aid to keep the tax on businesses from increasing as a result of the pandemic. It also follows the July enactment of a new Republican-backed law that made cuts to the number of weeks jobless Iowans could receive benefits. Democrats said the reduction in the tax on businesses shows Reynolds has prioritized businesses while not supporting workers enough. There was also word that Iowans owe an average of about $31,000 in student loan debt, meaning President Biden's announcement to forgive some debt could make a sizable dent in their payments. The president announced that federal student loan borrowers who earn less than $125,000 a year would be eligible for loan cancellation of $10,000. Those who were Pell Grant recipients will see $20,000 forgiven. There was also word that the Boone City Council held a pinning ceremony earlier this month for Officer Joseph Slight, who was promoted from patrol officer. Slight, who is the son of Boone Mayor John Slight, was one of 4 city patrol officers who tested for the promotion. All 4 passed the test. Joseph Slight has been with the department for 6 years. He's been involved in 2 officer-involved shootings and was cleared of wrongdoing both times. With 17 officers on staff, the Boone PD is in a growth phase. 1 new officer is finishing up in the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. That officer, a woman, will become the department's only female officer. And there was word that 4 Ames men had opened a food truck in the city. It's called Sandwich Studio. The 4 have worked together for years and opened the Sandwich Studio in July. The food truck is usually at the North Grand Mall parking lot, just north and east of the main entrance on Grand Avenue. It's open for lunch and dinner hours most days except Mondays. The truck also goes to special events. Sunday's Trib reported that a longtime seller of sweet corn at the corner of 13th and Grand Avenue in Ames was out of a coma and recovering from injury she had suffered in a crash near Woodward. 22-year-old Sierra Desplanques had been driving a truckload of sweet corn to Fort Dodge when she crashed in a median. She suffered 3 skull fractures, including 1 to the base of her skull, a broken jaw, multiple broken bones in her face, and several lacerations. She went into a coma, partly because of her injuries, and partly because doctors induced it to keep her comfortable and immobile as they assessed her brain injuries. She's had her ups and downs since then, but she's now out of her coma and been flown by air ambulance to a hospital in Colorado, where she will continue her recovery. Craig Hospital in Inglewood, Colorado, is one of the best in the nation for brain injuries. Sierra's father, Kevin, lives in Colorado and will be there as she continues her recovery. He's come to Ames for years to sell sweet corn, and he says he plans to come back again next summer. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council is considering naming the municipal airport after James Herman Banning, a former Ames resident who was the first black aviator to get a federal pilot's license. He was also the first black aviator, along with his friend Thomas Cox Ellen, to fly coast to coast across the U.S. The council could discuss the naming as early as next Tuesday. Banning was born in Oklahoma in 1900 and came to Ames in 1919 with his parents. He studied electrical engineering at Iowa State College while also operating an auto repair shop behind his parents' home, which was on what is now North 2nd Street. He took flying lessons and he was the first black aviator to get a license from the U.S. Department of Commerce in 1926. He flew across the nation with Allen in 1931. Banning died in 1933 as a passenger on a biplane in San Diego. And there was word that Iowa National Guard leaders had returned from a week-long trip to the Republic of Kosovo, reaffirming the Guard's military partnership with the emerging European democracy. Tuesday's Trib reported that a Boone County judge had sentenced a 66-year-old man to the maximum penalty of 120 years in prison on 5 counts of sexual abuse of 3 young girls. District Court Judge John Flynn told Tommy Collins, in the judge's words, "This is a life sentence in terms of practicality, but it is one that you earned." A jury had found Collins guilty in July of continuous sexual abuse of a child, 2 counts of second-degree sexual abuse, and 2 counts of third-degree sexual abuse. In a separate trial, Collins' wife Sharon was found guilty of 2 counts of child endangerment causing bodily injury. She will be sentenced September 21st. There was also a story about the new Ames High School. A ribbon-cutting ceremony was held at the school last Saturday, and the public got a chance to tour it. Even though classes are now being held there, a lot of work still needs to be done, including finishing the school's auditorium, a greenhouse, outdoor classroom and athletic fields, and yes, tearing down the old high school that still stands next door. The new school has capacity for 1,800 students, and nearly 1,500 are attending now. The main competition gym can hold 1,800 spectators, while nearly 500 spectators can watch above the new pool. The new auditorium will hold about 950 people. You want some more numbers? Well, here they are. The school is heated and cooled by more than 300 geothermal wells, each drilled 400 feet deep. And there's nearly 1 foot of concrete on the roof of the practice gym, which makes it a storm shelter against any potential weather issue. And the Trib reported that 14 years after flooding had forced the closure of the University of Iowa Museum of Art, the museum's art collection, which had been rushed out of the building as floodwaters approached, went into a new building on Burlington Street in Iowa City. The Museum of Art not only has a new location, it has a new name, the Stanley Museum of Art. Wednesday Trib reported that Iowa had detected its first outbreak of a deadly disease that infects rabbits, for which there is no vaccine and no known cure. Rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus 2 was confirmed in Story County. The Iowa Department of Agriculture did not identify where in the county it was detected, but said the rabbits were domestic and not part of a commercial herd. Though the disease is lethal to rabbits, it does not affect humans or livestock. In its most acute form, it can kill rabbits within 12 to 36 hours after symptoms appear, such as bleeding from the mouth, nose or rectum, fever, and difficulty breathing. There was also word that a nearly $170 million Iowa-based initiative that pays farmers for their environmental efforts will be among the first to win a grant from a new $1 billion Climate Smart Agriculture program. The Iowa Soybean Association's Soil and Water Outcomes Fund is designed to impact soil and water health in Iowa. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack made that announcement on Tuesday at the Farm Progress Show in Boone. Yesterday's Trib reported that the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it's sending nearly $22 million to about 110 local and regional lockers and meatpacking facilities in 37 states to enable them to process more livestock and sell their products more widely. Among them are 13 Iowa facilities that will receive a combined total of about $2.5 million to buy equipment, add space, and tackle other upgrades that will qualify them to be federally inspected or inspected through a special state program. That will help them sell their products across the nation. U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack said the program is designed to bolster the nation's meat processing and distribution system. The need became apparent 2 years ago when the coronavirus pandemic led to temporary shutdowns at big meatpacking plants across Iowa and the nation. The trip also reported on an Ames High School graduate studying mechanical engineering at the University of Iowa. H. Sayre Satterwhite recently received a scholarship from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and hopes to use it to study ocean currents and the interaction between the ocean and the atmosphere. And there was word that a block party will be held this Sunday evening at the Ames Pride and Bigwigs Bar. The headliner will be 1980s pop superstar Tiffany. The party starts at 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon in the parking lot of the bar at 6008 West Lincoln Way. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, heading home now for the holiday weekend, but reminding you there's plenty of good listening still ahead on Local Talk and on KHOI throughout the day and evening. So don't even think about touching that dial. I'll be right back here Monday morning at 7. That's right, Labor Day morning. Ready, willing, and able to report on what's been making news around the state. Until then, go ahead. Have a safe, healthy, and happy holiday weekend.
I love coffee, I love tea, I love the jive, my jive, and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the jive and me, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
Boy.
I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot, now pour me a shot. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Oh, slip me a slug from the wonderful mug. I've got a rug till I'm stuck in the jug. A slice of onion and raw one, draw one, waiter, waiter, percolator. I love coffee, I love tea, I love the jabba jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the jabba and me, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Oh, Boston beans, soybeans, green beans, cabbage and greens. I'm not keen upon a bean unless it is a cheery, cheery bean, boy. I love coffee, I love tea, I love the jabba jive and it loves me. Coffee and the tea and the jabba and me, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, yeah. I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot, now pour me a shot. A cup, a cup, a cup,
yeah.
Oh, throw me that slug from the wonderful mug. I'll cut a rug till I'm snug in the jug. Drop a nickel in the pot, Joe. I take 'em a slow. Waiter, waiter, percolator. I love coffee, I love tea, I love the jabba jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the jabba and me.
Yeah.
A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Boom.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, healthy, and happy week. The music interlude was the Ink Spots' Java Jive. And we now have Luke Spence of Nevada, who sponsors Coffee with the Candidates on Saturday mornings. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
We're doing all right. A little eye-opener there, and I thought it was an appropriate piece of music for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Say, how long have you been doing Coffee with the Candidates? I recall the last round prior to elections that you were making your area available for this kind of a venture. Give us a little history, please.
Yeah, I started this back, I believe this is my fourth election cycle, so 4 years plus the last caucus, which kind of makes it, which always runs at a different time schedule as a normal election. So I call that five election cycles
okay.
now. And I started, the idea kind of came to me back in 2017. I ran for city council in Nevada, and I was just looking for, there's a big disconnect a lot of times between the voters and the people who are trying to run for office. So I was trying to find a good, easy, accessible, kind of relaxing atmosphere where the voters and the people looking to run for office can kind of meet and exchange ideas. I thought, what better place to do that than a coffee shop downtown on a Saturday morning. And I ran it by the local coffee shop owner downtown, and they thought it was a great idea to help bring in some business downtown as well in Nevada and get some people into our downtown area on what's usually a slow, kind of quiet weekend morning. And then from there, I just had to reach out to the candidates to see if they thought it was a good idea. And it's always been, what I used to think would be my toughest problem was getting candidates to show up, especially in caucus season when they're a little bit more nationally known and all of that. But that's actually become the easiest part, is just emailing the candidates and telling them when my dates are. My calendar fills up very quickly now, which is a good problem to have for everybody.
Yeah, that's great, especially having that additional venue. And like you say, Saturday mornings and a coffee shop. What better? I mean, where do we discuss our the issues of the day around coffee or tea, a breakfast table, that kind of thing? And this seems like
exactly. Just
a natural, especially here in the Midwest in Iowa. Perfect.
Exactly. Yep. And we do have a new location this year, which is actually not too far from our old location.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it at a new place in town called Copper Spaces, which is actually owned by the same people who own the coffee shop, if you've been to our place before. But if you're looking at the coffee shop in downtown Nevada, looking at the front door, it's the door directly to the left. You go up a flight of stairs, and then it's a brand new business. We've kind of been part of their soft open this last month. They're opening up just this month where they rent out office space for people to use as they need to have a meeting or to kind of have a place away from home if they're working from home, that type of thing. And it's been a great setting for us. We've had two events already back in August,
mm-hmm.
and this setting is really great. And it highlights kind of a need that a lot of small cities like Nevada have, the prototypical downtown buildings where the upstairs used to be apartments and stuff like that, and they've become dilapidated, stuff like that. And this has been a great use by them to revitalize that portion of the buildings downtown and get more people into in there and get some more business going on. So at that new location right now. You can go to the coffee shop downstairs and then walk right upstairs and meet our candidates. So it's been a great partnership so far.
Another one of those community centers, meeting centers, kind of a low-key, relax, discuss events or work on your laptop, that kind of a thing, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's been great.
Yeah, and for folks that when you say you're facing the coffee shop and it's the next door left, that would be south, folks, for those who go north, south, east,
Correct. West.
So, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I think that's great to be pulling folks into our into Nevada, our county seat. What better place to have something like that? What kind of feedback have you been getting from the folks in Nevada, from downtown merchants and others?
Oh, they seem to love it. Anything that brings people downtown is always good. We've got some great businesses that have come in downtown. A great the coffee shop, like I've mentioned, great a donut shop that came in just recently. And then the same diners that have been there for years, and we're working on revitalizing our new, we're working on doing a new remodel of the Camelot Theater.
Right.
That's been there for generations. So Anything that gets people downtown to see what we have to offer in Nevada is great for everybody. It's a win-win for everybody, in my opinion.
Yeah, I personally, I live halfway between Ames and Nevada, and I probably spend as much time downtown Nevada as I do downtown Ames some weeks. So it's a great little you know, it's one of our hidden gems, really. A lot of folks I don't think realize what we've got there in Nevada. So, and it's just getting better. The silver lining for the COVID in some ways was there was less traffic, so you could get the Main Street rebuilt and revitalized.
Yeah,
and
that was a stressor for a lot of people, but it kind of, the timing worked out there. I don't know that anybody could say that they planned it that way, but it definitely worked out.
Yeah, well, we took advantage. We took advantage of what we could. Made lemonade out of lemons, right?
So, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've had some positive feedback. What kind of folks, how numbers wise, does that vary depending upon who is there that morning, or what are you seeing?
It does. The national candidates, when it was a caucus season, we'd fill the coffee shop up with 50, 60, 70 people sometimes. When we get to the more local races, that doesn't quite bring in as many people, which is understandable. But I find that the more local candidates have more personal things individual to Story County or Nevada or something like that to talk about. So for me, they're just as, if not more interesting to hear, you know, what a Story County attorney candidate or a county board of supervisor candidate has to say. It touches home a lot more for you individually. So it might not fill the room up with as many people, but we still get a good, you know, 25 people, at most of our events, which is, I feel like on a Saturday morning, you know, a lot of soccer practice is starting up. So there's a lot of things going on still. So to get people out is, I still feel like we're having a pretty good turnout.
Yeah. Well, and it's that time of day when maybe some things are starting, but it still gives folks an opportunity to stop by. They're going to need their coffee anyway. So
exactly.
Why not become informed and find out what candidates are about and some of their interests and concerns? And I assume the exchange for those who haven't, you know, attended one of these, that there's some question and answer, give and take opportunities here.
Absolutely. Yep. Usually the candidate will give a quick little kind of their stump speech for however long, 5-10 minutes. And then, in my opinion, the smarter ones open it up to questions earlier, because that gets to the crux of why everybody's there. Most people come with a question. So you open it up to question and answers, and there's never a shortage. I usually, as kind of the moderator, have a few stock questions, but in the back of my head to kind of keep the conversation going. In 5 years, I've never had to actually stick my head in and kind of keep the conversation going. People who come are coming because they want to hear what people have to say and maybe have a question of their own that they want to ask. So there's never a shortage of time, but they usually run on average about an hour. Mm-hmm. So it's not eating up a whole lot of your day. And it you know, everybody usually walks away feeling like they have a pretty good idea of who the candidate is too.
Yeah. And these kinds of opportunities also, it's a fact-finding mission for folks, really. And so, you know, the individuals that are there, everybody's is surprisingly civil and depending, you know, no matter what their outlook is, but it gives them an opportunity to find out more about the candidate and gives a candidate that idea to be able to share. In some cases, almost a one-on-one. It feels like there's some more one-on-one feel for the question answer.
Yeah, you really get a good opportunity to kind of kick the tires of the candidates, so to speak, because they are, you know, it's not the internet where you have you're behind a keyboard and you know, saying whatever you want to say. These are the actual people. You get to have an actual conversation with a real person, which it is always, it seems, much more civil, much more enjoyable, and you learn a lot more about them as well. And you know, I've found that, you know, people that I thought I would disagree with quite a bit end up being surprisingly perfectly good people, and they're just, you know, we just have difference of opinion, which is perfectly fine. So it's always great to have those one-on-one interactions. I think we kind of all become a little bit less frustrated with the process when we actually can have some one-on-one conversations with people. So it's a good experience for everybody.
Yeah, and I think you're right there that talking about, well, you might go in with some preconceived notions, but then you find out that, maybe you disagree on some things, but maybe that, maybe it's not quite as disparaging or as far apart on issues as maybe you've right. originally thought. So,
right. Diverse ideas and different discussions is what brought us to having some of the great stuff that we have, too. So it's good to have discussions. It's good to have some disagreement, I think, too.
Luke, tell us once again the location, the time that you're holding this, and we'll go from there.
Saturdays at 9 o'clock, every Saturday between now and Election Day, at 9 o'clock at Copper Spaces, which their address is 1026 6th Street. In Nevada. It's right next to Farm Grounds, which is a coffee shop that we've done it before, owned by the same people. And we have a full slate in September. This coming Saturday, tomorrow, we have Ryan Melton, who is a Nevada resident running for Congress in the 4th District. He'll be there this tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Next week is Kara Warmey, who's running for the County Board of Supervisors in Story County. The 17th, we have Paul Pate, the Secretary of State for the state of Iowa. And then on the 24th is Lisa Heddens, who's an incumbent running for the County Board of Supervisors in Nevada, or in Story County as well. And then in October, we have Joel Miller, John Norwood, who are running for Secretary of State and Secretary of Ag, Nico Pilcher running for Story County Attorney, Linda Merkin for the Board of Supervisors, Rob Sand, probably the most popular state auditor in the country, I think. I don't know too many people who know their state auditor, but most people know who Rob Sand is. And then Todd Halper, who's actually running against Mr. Sand. So a very full slate. We had Mike Franken last week running for the Senate. He did a great job. He's had the biggest draw that we've had so far. So it's been – and then Tim Meals was the leadoff back on earlier in the month, too, running for county attorney. So – it's been a great turnout so far. A lot of people have been coming out. We're hoping to see more. So,
well, Luke, thank you for providing this opportunity for folks to get to know the candidates. This is part of what a democracy is all about. And kudos to you for stepping up and doing this all these years. And sure hope that you plan on continuing to do this in the future as well. We don't have that many, those venues are just not there anymore. And this is a great opportunity. So thank you.
Well, I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun for me too. And it's a great opportunity to bring a lot of people together. So I won't be stopping anytime soon.
Okay. Thanks. That was Luke Spence, folks, and Opportunity Coffee with the Candidates. And this Saturday at 9 o'clock at the Copper Spaces at 1026 6th Street, door just south of the coffee grounds. So please come. Learn about your candidates. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too.
Thanks for having me.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
We're going downtown to visit with Susan Guiazda and her guest, Courtney Court, this morning. So, good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Just a couple of announcements to start off your Friday. It is the three-day weekend. That means Labor Day is just around the corner, and that means that City Hall and most of the offices will be closed for Labor Day. So enjoy your Monday off, and we'll see you again on Tuesday. Also, just another reminder that the City Council is seeking comments on the possible renaming of the Ames Municipal Airport to James Herman Banning Airport. You can find a comment card on our website, cityofames.org/airport name. Make it pretty easy for you to find. It's just an open box. It's unended in characters. You can write as much or as little as you like. Mm-hmm. The council did just ask for consideration of this name. And if it's not the name you care for, that's fine. And you can write that in your comments. Or if you think others should be considered, you can simply write that. They're not seeking other names at this point, but they're really just looking at input on this name. And there'll be discussion on the airport name on the September 27th agenda. So we want comments by September 15th.
Okay, that sounds like a win-win all the way around, but especially that idea of being able to hear what folks have to say on this issue. I think it's a great thing, but that's my personal opinion.
Sure, and we're getting comments. We're collecting comments that come in off our Facebook and Instagram pages. So if you've commented that way, that's fine. There was also an email address to McKinley Ritter, mckinley.ritter@cityofames.org, or to me. Okay. You can email us with your comments as well, and we'll collect those, aggregate them, and give them to this council.
We've got a weekend, a pleasant weekend for weather. Susan, do you have a comment before we go to Courtney on activities?
Well, I do. No, I don't have a comment on it. Just that Labor Day, I think for a lot of people, sort of signifies the end of summer, and it is the perfect time to have our recreation superintendent here because it also signifies the wrap-up of some of our programs.
Okay, and that's where Courtney comes in to find out what's being wrapped up and what's starting. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning. Yes, good segue. So, as we talked about, obviously this weekend, long weekend, Labor Day, and the City Hall office is closed, so that does include the community center and weight room that's mm-hmm. located at 515 Clark Avenue. But some of our other facilities are open. We have Homewood Golf Course that'll be open, so available on everybody's time off to go out and play a round of golf, and the Ames ISU Ice Arena will also be open on Labor Day. So if you're looking for something to do, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., there will be an open public skate. So still a lot of things to get out and do on the long weekend. But like Susan said, Furman Aquatic Center, it will be open. Its last day of the season is on Labor Day,
okay.
But it will be open throughout the weekend with open swims tonight from 5 to 7, and then Saturday 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., and then Sunday from 1 to 8, and Monday from 1 to 5. So still opportunities in the later afternoon to partake in an open swim and all the amenities at Furman Aquatic Center in its last couple days. And then we also will have our typical 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. programming Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, as well as today. And the weekends we will also have our 11 to 1 programming includes water walking, lap swimming, and tot time in the splash pool for the kids. So go out and enjoy, like Susan said, the kind of signifies the end of summer, and so go out and enjoy the weather while you can.
It's often the case, though, where we get a week or so after Labor Day and it's just blazing hot, and I'm sure there are folks that wish that you'd stay open a little longer, but I assume staffing is part of the reason that that's a date that's picked. Am I on track with that?
The seasonality of the pool, a lot of these types of facilities go through Labor Day. We're actually one of the few in the state that actually stay open. Our outdoor aquatic center stays open until Labor Day. A lot closed right when school goes back into session. And then some even this year with staffing who typically stay open through Labor Day or do stay until the start of school. Once the 1st of August rolled around, they were closing their facilities just because of the staffing and, you know, high school students with their activities, college students, you know, going back to school. So we're really thankful for our staff that has stuck around. Us, just like everybody else, struggling to get staff all throughout the summer. But obviously one of the goals here for us is to remain open through Labor Day, just because so many other places are closed to provide something for the community. So we've been able to have a few staff members that are coming in after school or in their breaks of their college classes. So we're really thankful for them to you know, remain open.
Okay. A question that I've thought about, and I know others probably do as well, what happens to the water once you close that pool? What I assume it's used for other purposes as the area is prepared for winter?
Yeah, so it gets backwashed and cleaned, and it is backwashed through sanitary. So the pools are drained. That gives us some opportunities in the off season to, you know, repaint, you know, the basins if needed. That's a you know, every so often years, a capital project, and then any just general maintenance on the equipment. So the pools are drained, and then that's when the season starts up in April or in May. On Memorial Day, that's usually a good sign that things are going on when you drive down 13th Street and can look over the fence and into Furman and see the pools getting filled up again.
Okay, yeah. You talk about maintenance, and there's some what I would call more individual or passive types of activities that folks, well, actually through the pandemic years, they've taken part more in some of the trails, some of those facilities we have in our parks. What kind of maintenance is involved in keeping all, especially surface trails and objects and things that might present dangers or need repair, that kind of thing? Is that part of your bailiwick here? Is that in your wheelhouse, or is that something that somebody else is in charge of? Can you address that at all?
So on my side, I'm the recreation superintendent. So those facilities that we just talked about and the programming that occurs at those facilities, those are under my umbrella. What you're talking about is under the umbrella of Parks and Recreation as far as, you know, maintenance on trails, parks, any of the above. And that falls under, so Joshua Thompson, who's the Parks and Facility Superintendent, that's kind of more in the realm that he oversees, but it's all part of Parks and Recreation. We all, you know, working at facilities, you know, we all have to kind of join in and help with different projects. And so it does less fall under mine, but Parks and Recreation, I mean, it's roots to roofs. So it's basically anything from ground up. So it's definitely under the umbrella of Parks and Recreation, and things, you know, ebb and flow, you know, seasonally of what, you know, different focuses are. You did mention, you know, obviously with parks, as far as the programming on that side and activities for this weekend, I just remembered in your question there that Banshell Park this weekend, actually tonight, is the free community movie, The Neverending Story, is going to be shown at 8 p.m. And free popcorn, bring out your lawn chairs, bring out your blankets. Free movie will start at 8 p.m. And then if there is any weather, doesn't look like it. Looks like we'll have some good weather, but knock on wood, if we did have to transition facilities, it's not canceled. It would just be moved to the City Auditorium at 8:30 p.m. So we hope to see everybody out and kind of kick off their Labor Day weekend with a fun movie in the park.
Yeah, at least within the last 15 minutes when we were reading the weather, it still looks like it's going to be pretty nice today into tomorrow. So hopefully you won't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it's always nice when you can avoid that elements of things, and it's the fifth annual movie tonight. So there's been sometimes it's worked well for us, sometimes it hasn't, but I think we're in good shape for tonight.
So if this movie is The Never-Ending Story, does that mean that's what we're going to see from here on out every year, or?
Yeah, just for 2 hours, just for about an hour, 90-minute time block. So
okay.
The story will live on in how you want to and in your life. So there you go. How's that?
That's great. Yeah. You know, I was East River Valley around the supper hour, a little bit after, and noticed the soccer fields are being covered with participants again. So I assume that is up and running now. How long does that season usually last?
Yeah, so that season usually lasts till the end of October, those games. So, like you said, you'll see a lot of fall soccer participants out about in different parks practicing. Their games start September 13th, so they're getting all practiced up for their first game. And then likewise with softball fields, softball leagues have started back up this past week, some leagues just starting up this weekend today. So, like you said, parks are still going to have a lot of activities with those fall activities. starting up. And then you'll also see out at Emma McCarthy Lee in the next couple weeks, we're putting on, in conjunction with the Cyclone Lacrosse Club, a Flex 6 lacrosse clinic. Flex 6 lacrosse clinic, try saying that really fast, for different ages, grade 2nd through 8th. And they're just really trying to make the sport of lacrosse more accessible. So Flex 6 is a condensed lacrosse. They provide all the equipment, and it's really an introductory where, you know, everybody can play. And so it's a great introductory course. So they're going to be putting on a clinic. So you'll see that going on at Emma McCarthy Lee September 12th through the 29th. And people can still register for that if they're interested and have a youngster 2nd through 8th grade. They'll meet twice a week for 3 weeks. So that'll be a fun thing that, you know, you typically think of your typical sports, but being able to introduce and try something new, it might be the exact fit for somebody.
Yeah, that's a sport that's gaining more popularity in the eastern states. It's much more established and popular, and up into Canada. But it's something relatively new, I would say, for this part of the country. I know, growing up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, for a few years, they actually had a semi. It wasn't a real noted practice, but there were folks that would participate in that there. So it's fun to watch, and if you got a little more flexibility in things, which some of us are starting to have problems with, it's a great sport.
Yeah, like you said, one of the fastest growing sports in the past decade, 5 years. So definitely gaining traction, and just like some of these other more specialty sports that people think of, just making them more accessible so kids can try them at an early age and see if it's something that they like without having to, you know, really, really invest everything up front. You know, you can go to a clinic, learn a little bit about it, and see if you like it. And go from there. So that's neat with their partnership being able to bring that, because some of those things, you know, just with Parks and Rec, with, you know, different expertise people have and equipment and all that type of thing, it's great to partner with these community groups to put something on that we might not be able to produce just on our own. So great working with them.
Yeah, new opportunities. It's always good, keeps folks interest for those who want to do a little exploration. So Courtney, we're wrapping up here. Is there any last words you want to share with our listeners this morning?
I would just encourage everybody. There's a lot of things. We just barely skimmed the surface. So I would encourage everybody to go to the cityofames.org website or amesparkrec.org, direct link there, and view our brochures of programs through the end of December. And then coming out November 1, we'll actually have our start of next year's brochure with information from January through March. So just encourage everybody to go online at amesparkrec.org or follow us on Facebook at Ames Parks and Recreation to stay in tune with all the things that are going on.
Okay. Thank you, Courtney. That's Courtney Court, superintendent of the recreational facility with Ames Parks and Rec. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
September always makes me think of agrarian situations, the natural resources of the United States, what we really have around us that we should be thankful for. And for some reason, Fanfare to the Common Man by Aaron Copland, I think, is fitting to introduce our next guest, Mary Wilkins from the Iowa State University Extension. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great here. Great start to our September. We're going to have a great weekend. What have you folks got in store for us from ISU Extension?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Good morning. We are really excited to be here. First and foremost, I would like to introduce a new colleague. Catherine McKenzie is doing our Ag and Natural Resource Programming, and so we're really excited to have her on board, and I'll let her introduce herself a little bit more to get us started.
Well, there you go. How did you like that introduction?
Really nice, really nice. I'm Catherine McKenzie. I just started here at Iowa State Extension here in Story County. I am a recent graduate from Sam Houston State University, and I was born and raised in Texas. So Iowa's ag and natural resources are a little different than what I'm used to,
sure,
but I am super excited to be here.
And I'll bet it isn't as flat as you maybe pictured Iowa, unless you've been here a few times. There's a lot of hidden gems in this state.
Yeah, I did not expect it to be as hilly as it is.
Yeah, you know, if they get out of their airplane or their car and actually have to walk or bike this state, they realize this is a pretty fascinating and challenging state at times. So, well, enough about the state. Let's talk a little bit more about you and your program.
Oh, so I have just a few programs going on right now, but they're week-long programs for, like, my master gardeners. But Mary and I have worked together to create a youth ag program.
Okay.
And we get to talk about the native bees. And sure. So with the native bee program, we are actually hosting this program in partnership with Bayer on September 17th. It is for all ages. We want everyone that would like to come learn about native bees, give them the opportunity to do so. It will be held September 17th from 10 a.m. to 12 noon at the Bayer site near Huxley. It'll be a great opportunity to learn what a native bee is, if that might be new for some, what their important role is in pollination, why that's important, and certainly factors that maybe have decreased the number of our native bees, the number of our pollinators in general, and what can we do locally, even within our own house, how can we support the growth of our pollinators, because we really do need them.
So it sounds like part of that program will be talking about maybe native plantings and habitat.
Absolutely. Bayer has a pollinator habitat on site that will be part of the experience as well. So you'll hear information from Extension as well as from the folks at Bayer.
Okay.
Sounds like something.
Well, I was just going to make a pun. Sounds like something we should all be there.
I love it. Yes. There is no fee whatsoever. We do want everyone to be able to participate. However, to help us know where we are at with attendance, a pre-registration is appreciated, and we are taking those at our office. So anyone that would like to join us can give us a call at 515-337-1601. Otherwise, they can reach us through our email as well.
Okay.
So that'll be a great way to do that. And it really will be a unique and fun opportunity for youth as well as adults. Very interactive. We have some great activities planned for that as well.
And you had listed open house here as one of the points, your talking points this morning. What's that about?
Yes. So September is also the start of our 4-H program year.
Okay.
And so 4-H is our youth development program that is available to all school-aged youth, kindergarten through 12th grade. We have clubs located throughout Story County. And so youth and families have an opportunity to participate in a club experience, explore their own interests, be a part of club activities, caring for their communities, opportunity to develop skills. We develop those skills over a long period of time. So as students go through school, they're developing those skills, and they are able to explore those skills and practice those skills through the 4-H program experience as well. So to help communicate more about the 4-H experience and opportunities, we are hosting an open house on September 13th at 6:30 p.m. And so we want to help others know what the 4-H program is and how they can be a part of that. That will be hosted here at our office. We're located at 1421 South Bell Avenue, Suite 107, 106. We're in that building.
Yeah, okay.
We're across from the DMAC on Zyker Center. So we're really excited to share that as well. And actually, families and everyone will find us at one more spot on September 10th. We will be at the Ames Main Street Farmers Market.
Okay.
And so we'll bring all of that information with us as well. And happy to meet folks and interact and help answer questions and share all of our program opportunities at that time as well.
So this is like an introduction to the 4-H experience. And for folks that maybe aren't familiar with 4-H, just explain a little bit the idea behind how it started, why it started, and why it's continuing and able to continue, if you would.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a great question. So 4-H is part of Iowa State University. It comes from Iowa State as the land grant university, and so that's where 4-H comes from. So 4-H is actually in every state. And then within Iowa, it's across the whole state in every county because every county has a local extension office as well.
Mm-hmm.
So with the 4-H Youth Development Program, their overall mission is to help youth reach their full potential through youth and adult partnerships and research-based experiences. And so those experiences happen in a variety of ways, in a club setting, opportunities that are available at a county level, opportunities that are at a state level, even national and international levels. There's several priority program areas that include healthy living, STEM, leadership and civic engagement, and communication and the arts. And so 4-H is implemented in a variety of ways, whether it's a club experience or other kinds of methods of implementing programs through events, camps, school enrichment programs, after school programs. That can happen in a variety of ways.
Okay. So that gives us a good background, because I think there are folks out there that associate 4-H only with the fair, the county or the state fair, and they need to know that there's a lot of prep, a lot of training, and a lot of work that goes in. And that's just kind of the highlight or the culmination. This is a great program that kind of builds confidence in people and shows them that, they can excel in their areas of interest and help them get out and share and, then share their knowledge and promote it. So
county fair is just one piece.
Yeah.
It sometimes is a highlight. It's a way to showcase what youth have learned, but that learning has occurred over the course of a whole school year through their various experiences.
Okay. Well, we got about less than a minute. Is there any last minute things you want to highlight here, Mary? Or Catherine, I assume we're going to be talking to you in the future on occasion. So welcome aboard.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And anyone is able to reach out to us. Again, we're located at 1421 South Bell Avenue. Our phone number is 515-337-1601. And our website is www.extension.iastate.edu/story.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Wilkins, and welcome, Catherine McKenzie. Thank you for ISU Extension.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday news summary, and thanks to Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's broadcast, and a tug of the toque for local producer Lynn Carey. I want to thank our guests, Luke Spence, Susan Guiazda, Courtney Court, and from ISU Extension, Mary Wilkins and Catherine McKenzie. I've been your host, Mike Metz. And please know that Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a program. And if you have interest in joining the local team, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue. So contact us, 515-292-2878, or you can go to our khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard from today were The Ink Spots, Petula Clark, and Aaron Copeland. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now!, and Adagio follows at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. See you again on the radio.
KHOI, Horse City, and Ames.